A few months ago, I gathered with others in the Lexington community to form a new LGBT singing group called New Song in the Bluegrass. We were introduced to one of the songs for our upcoming Christmas concert. I never heard the song. It's called The Yearning. Even in its raw form, because you know songs never sound very good when you are first hearing or learning them, but even in the raw form, the first time I heard it, the words touched me deeply. There is a yearning in hearts weighed down by ancient grief and centuries of sorrow. There is a yearning in hearts that in the darkness hide and in the shades of death abide, a yearning for tomorrow. A yearning for the promised one, a yearning for the Lord who visited his own. And the song continues, Emmanuel, Emmanuel, who within our hearts the yearning. I couldn't get the song out of my head. It was poignant and powerful. It caused me to stop and reflect, what do I yearn for? Yearning, by definition, is described as an intense or overpowering longing or desire or need. It is a deeply embedded craving. It suddenly occurred to me, or maybe not so suddenly, for it was after weeks of wrestling with this idea of yearning, but it occurred to me that maybe I was not alone in yearning for my life to be fully congruent with God's plan. Maybe others were yearning for wholeness. Maybe others were yearning for world peace or community advocacy for the homeless, addicted, or ignored. Maybe, just maybe, as we begin a new era of Bluegrass United, Church of Christ in a new physical church home, maybe we could discern together our yearnings and begin the journey of the words again from the song. The journey of when all our sorrows are erased and we shall see the one who placed within our hearts the yearning. Isaiah, known in biblical scholarship circles as an 8th century prophet, speaks here in the beginning of his prophecy of such a yearning. Roughly 800 years before Jesus came into our world, Isaiah would speak of a time when the ancient community would turn away from worldly definitions of prosperity and full living and turn towards the vision of God. In Isaiah's ancient world, followers of Yahweh, which was the Hebrew name for God, were continuously being beaten down, persecuted, and losing their very lives at the hands of political powers and social oppression. For the most part, very few people were living with a God conscience. It was a culture of the haves versus the have-nots in the largest sense. We tend to forget that, I think. We look around to things in our world and we hear commentary that we've done a great injustice because we, especially those of us who claim to be progressive Christians, we've taken God out of our country, out of our schools. Those of us who believe that God should be important enough to be taught at home and leave academics to the schools. Those of us who believe that our government was established to allow both freedom of various religious paths and freedom from religion. We've doomed our world. We get caught up in the blame game, thinking that the challenges we have today are all new. But they're not. And frankly, for all of us in this room, we can't even relate to the dire circumstances faced by the first listeners to Isaiah's prophecy. Things were beyond bad. And in my humble opinion, it wasn't and it isn't because we've taken God out of anything. You can't take God out of us. We can't take God out of the world. It is because we have collectively failed to bring God's vision to our earth. This isn't a new prophecy, by the way. It's a message that is thousands of years old. So do not shoot the messenger this morning. Or take aim. Had the ancient community had Fox News, they too would have heard that this new vision of God was hogwash. That trickle-down economics would eventually feed the poor and house the homeless or educate the children. The kings of Isaiah's day wanted to hear this alternative message, but they didn't want to listen to it. They lived in that tension between believing enough in God to be fearful of what God might be saying, but not believing enough in God to change their living. It was what I call a just-in-case theology. I'll check a few boxes of faithful living just in case this God thing is for real. But I'm really not going to change a lot of my thinking or my living. In the ancient community, there were a ton of just-in-case folks. Praise be to God, that's changed. And yet, in the midst of all this, surrounded by oppression and having no reason to buy in, there were a few folks that moved beyond just-in-case. They were all in. They understood very clearly God's vision. Isaiah was one of them. And in these four verses of chapter 2, he speaks of a time when he will be joined on the mountain. A metaphor used extensively in the Old Testament. A metaphor for a place where people would finally get the big picture. Isaiah's vision is that someday the just-in-case multitudes would stream to the mountain of God's vision for love, peace, hope, and joy for all people. Isaiah's message in times of great difficulty was the promising confidence that the future, our future, their future, belongs to a living God. Isaiah proclaims that regardless of where power seems to lie in the present, people eventually would be drawn to God from all nations, from all cultures, from all races, from all denominations. It is an inclusive prophecy, one where all will stream to the mountain for a deeper understanding of God and a higher perspective of God's vision. This picture of unity and justice and shared openness to the divine speaks to some of our deepest hopes, the deeper yearnings that lie beneath. Let's be honest. By the time the Advent season comes around, we have already been primed by our culture for the big event. Catalogs arrive, showing pictures of happy and traditionally white families in matching pajamas enjoying a quiet moment together. Commercials splash across the TV screen promising love in the form of a new jewelry piece or contentment in the form of a new gadget. Store displays evoke nostalgia for childhood wonder. And we're all encouraged to lean together toward the coming big event when fantasies will be fulfilled and dreams may yet come true. All the while, in our hearts, we know that most families these days are struggling to get by. They don't have houses to live in, much less matching pajamas. We know that relationships are hard work, regardless of the carrot size, and that a new gadget will become obsolete within weeks of its release. We're tempted to take this knowledge and travel the easy road of simple assault against the culture and commercial messages. Yet given more reflection, what we might come to understand is that the reason these messages are so powerful is that there is that human yearning that is real and powerful. The season of Advent, when we give focus each week to the theme of love, peace, hope, and joy, may we be reminded of our heartfelt yearnings. Because once tapped, these yearnings may reveal something raw and disillusioned. For as much as we long for a day when weapons are laid down and hearts are transformed and people are drawn together, we find it hard to believe that such a day will actually come. And so it's sometimes much easier to pin our hopes on gifts and holiday feasts than it is to open ourselves to the possibility in believing in something seemingly impossible. We've been disappointed so many times by failed peace treaties abroad, by divisions in our own culture, and by fractured relationships in our own lives. It can paralyze our living and prevent us from walking into God's hope and embraced fully by God's love. So we are called, my brothers and sisters, we're called to open ourselves in a way that allows God's vision to cause our old wounds to throb into God's possibilities. Isaiah's invitation is to live toward the light of God, calling those who have glimpsed God's light to trust that more light lies ahead. Advent proposes impossibilities, and the season keeps giving us calls to blurt out the question of Mary, how can this be? As with Mary, we find ourselves in the presence of mystery. Some 3,000 years ago, Isaiah said, in the days to come, and we respond, what days? When? When will world peace occur? When will a healthy, loving relationship come into my life? Perhaps all we can say is that the vision describes what God is, in fact, at work in the world to do. Working in us, among us. And that Jesus, who came of believers, and we can too. This morning, our closing hymn includes these lyrics. Love has come and never will leave us. Love is life everlasting and free. Love is Jesus within and among us. Love is the peace our hearts are seeking. Love is a gift of Christmas. Love, praise to our God on high. I don't know about you this morning, but I am yearning for love. Between people, among people, within people, true love. In the midst of the world that seems deprived of God's love, or in a personal life that longs for love to be expressed or felt, or love that we can't quite put our hands on. Love has come to us. It is a deeper love on a higher plane. And it's a love that never will leave. It's God's love in you and in me. We are called together at the foot of God's mountain and to walk towards God's love and light together, even when it seems impossible. For God's presence will not be seen or God's love be felt in the ordinary of our lives. It will be like that announcement to Mary that comes unexpected and unplanned, where from the depths of our human yearning, we live into the dreams and promises of God, the one who placed within our hearts that yearning. This, my friends, is no simple sightseeing trip, but it is a purposeful journey to a holy place, to a deeper and higher yearning. Do we dare join the climb this Advent season?